What happens when ancient Buddhist wisdom collides with modern psychoanalysis? Mark Epstein's groundbreaking work reveals that the Buddha was perhaps the first psychoanalyst, understanding human suffering with remarkable psychological sophistication 2,500 years before Freud. This isn't merely academic curiosity, it's a roadmap for navigating our most profound psychological struggles. The Buddha recognized that our suffering stems not from external circumstances, but from our relationship with our own minds. We create elaborate mental prisons, believing ourselves victims of outside forces when we're actually trapped by our own unrecognized patterns. Think about it. How often do you blame circumstances for emotional states that actually originate within? The Buddhist psychological model offers something Western psychology is only beginning to fully appreciate, a comprehensive understanding of how we create our own suffering and, more importantly, how we can release ourselves from it. The Buddha's psychological genius appears in the Wheel of Life, depicting six realms being cycled through in endless rebirth. These realms effectively map our recurring mental states. The hell realm represents states of fear and rage where we feel victimized. The animal realm embodies our unconscious reactivity to instincts, while the hungry ghost realm represents those endlessly chasing gratification for outdated needs. After enlightenment, the Buddha initially hesitated to teach, believing his insights went against the stream of conventional thinking. His first noble truth confronts an uncomfortable reality. We cannot sustain the illusion of self-sufficiency. We're all subject to decay, aging, death, and disappointment, caught in a futile struggle to maintain ourselves in our own image. The Buddhist term for this condition, dukkha, encompasses unsatisfactoriness from mortality, our cycle of likes and dislikes, and our own personalities. We exist between fears of isolation and dissolution, never achieving the fixed identity we crave. The second truth identifies craving as suffering's cause, including both sensory cravings and deeper narcissistic ones. Buddhism doesn't deny pleasure, but warns against attachment to sensory experiences as sources of ultimate satisfaction, as their temporary nature cannot fulfill our craving for certainty. The Buddha taught a practical psychology of liberation rather than speculative theory. When asked directly whether there was a self, he remained silent, not from evasion, but profound insight. Answering either way would reinforce erroneous views. The Buddha refused to endorse either side of dualities, self or no self, existence or non-existence, paralleling modern psychological understanding. The longing for existence or non-existence manifests as grandiosity or emptiness, both causing dissatisfaction. Like skilled psychoanalysts, the Buddha counseled a middle way between the grandiose self, omnipotent yet fragile, and the empty self, hollow and alienated. While psychoanalysis attributes narcissism to parental deficiencies, Buddhism sees it as inherent to human nature. We impose false coherence on ourselves, grasping for identity by identifying with something or nothing, oscillating between fullness and emptiness. Buddhist philosophers recognized how difficult it is to avoid seeking certainty in either grandiose or empty self-images. Even concepts like universal mind or true self can become attachments. How often do you oscillate between feeling special and feeling like nothing at all? After 6 years of struggle, the Buddha achieved enlightenment by discovering that craving is the house builder of our suffering. By seeing craving clearly, he broke its power. All your rafters have been broken, your ridgepole shattered, achieving unconditional freedom. Unlike psychoanalysis, which views instinctual drives as inescapable, the Buddha proposed we can be liberated simply by clearly seeing craving in our minds. At a Thai forest monastery, meditation master Achan Cha demonstrated this principle with a glass. For me, this glass is already broken. When I understand that this glass is already broken, every moment with it is precious. He spoke of both impermanence and our mistaken belief in a permanent self, enabling appreciation without clinging. Buddhism and psychoanalysis recognize two essential life energy currents, wisdom and compassion in Buddhism, ego and object libido in psychoanalysis. Wisdom eradicates ignorance about self-nature, while compassion transforms desire by recognizing there is no separate subject needing reunion with an other. What would change if you could truly see your cravings without being controlled by them? Common meditation misconceptions include believing emotions must be expressed or they'll pollute us, viewing selflessness as merger with surroundings, or treating emotions as wild animals needing control. Notably, the Buddha never specifically named meditation. The closest term, bhavana, means mental development. What matters isn't meditation itself, but developing key qualities of mind. Illustrated by his parable of the raft, meditation helps cross samsara but shouldn't be clung to afterward. Meditation reveals our everyday mind, constantly murmuring, judging, and reacting with childish, emotionally tinged thoughts. Buddhist practice develops bare attention, which the Buddha described as the clear and single-minded awareness of what actually happens to us and in us at successive moments of perception. He taught two types of attention: concentration, repeatedly returning to a central object to generate tranquility, and mindfulness, being aware of exactly what's happening in mind and body as it occurs. This practice shifts our perception from seeing self as a bounded entity to experiencing it as an ever-evolving pattern in time. Meditation and psychotherapy offer distinct yet complementary approaches. Psychotherapy reconstructs personal history through relationship reenactment, while meditation deconstructs the self by intensifying certain ego functions. Therapy builds explanatory narratives, meditation questions our fundamental self-metaphors. We typically conceptualize ourselves using spatial metaphors, an entity with boundaries, layers, and a core, fueling the search for a true self. Buddhist meditation begins with this spatial metaphor before transcending it. Its power lies in redirecting attention from the disappointing object to the misperceived subject during moments of injured innocence. By shifting focus to the felt sense of I, one can explore difficult emotions while questioning identification with them, creating space around emotions without diminishing their intensity. This allows us to recognize emotions as inevitable but fleeting responses rather than threats to our stability. The integration of Buddhist awareness with psychological understanding offers a path to freedom. When we hold difficult emotions in bare attention without reaction, pain transforms into peace. Our challenging moments become opportunities for liberation rather than traps in reactive cycles. This isn't escaping our humanity, but fully embracing it with clear awareness. The Dalai Lama notes that spiritual practice fulfills our yearning for happiness, not temporary happiness dependent on conditions, but profound well-being that remains stable amid life's changes. By recognizing how craving and aversion create suffering, we discover the freedom that has always been present. Our minds, once the source of suffering, become instruments of liberation. The invitation is to turn toward our experience with courageous awareness rather than away in habitual reaction. In doing so, we discover that tormenting thoughts arise and pass in awareness itself without a thinker. What remains is the vibrant, compassionate presence that has been our birthright all along. Will you accept the invitation to discover who you truly are beyond your mind's stories?